This is the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back, everyone. We are the Power Lunch Radio, sponsored by Interpares Capital, your business partner for financing your commercial real estate investments. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, along with my handsome co-host and partner and husband, Jay Como.
Welcome back. We are the wife and husband duo, bringing you Women News Talk Radio. We're committed to ensuring women are recognized in the media as equally as men. And as a father of two daughters, I know firsthand the importance of building that foundation for the next generation. And as I've also mentioned last week specifically, this is one of the best ways to get a date with my lovely wife.
Yes, and that's why you rock, dear. We are trying to work on better date nights. But what can you believe? We are already in April. That means Women's History Month has actually came and went, but we still have a ton of women headliners in the news. Especially this past week, it was kind of poignant to have a groundbreaking case tie up the last week of March. We'll discuss that later in the show. But let's say hello to all of our great listeners and new followers out there. Don't forget, you can access all of our past episodes and podcasts off of our website, www.ewnradionetwork.com/power-lunch. You can also view all our other sister radio shows on the EWN Radio Network, and I think you'll find some great shows on there as well.
And don't forget our mobile app. We've definitely been receiving more listeners on the app itself. You can find our free mobile app on the Apple Store, Google Play, or the Amazon Store. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Power Lunch Radio, and you'll see the mobile app with Mona Lisa's beautiful face on it.
Lastly, you can also find us on Twitter. Both Jay and I are on Twitter. I'm Mona Lisa at Mona Lisa Como, all one word, and Jay is Jay_Como. We just got Jay on Twitter, so he is definitely getting ready to put a little bit more tweets out there. We do have a LinkedIn, Google Plus, and Facebook fan page. We understand the importance of social media and connecting with our listeners the way they are most comfortable. So if you want to contact us on any of those sites, please feel free. We do answer all of our tweets as well as our comments and messages.
And we're ready to go. Let's get started with our women headliners in sport.
Yes, Jay, and March has ended, and so has March Madness. We are days away from the Women's Final Four, which will be held April 5th through 7th in lovely Tampa, Florida. And the Final Four teams are gearing up for the big tournament. This week, Maryland upset Tennessee to pave the way for another trip to the Final Four. It was a surprise for the team as well as their opponents. Lexi Brown, a big name in Maryland, was huge in ensuring the Terrapins, hopefully I said their mascot right, solidified the upset.
Lexi Brown is no novice to basketball. She is pedigreed. Her dad is Dee Brown, former first-round draft pick of the Boston Celtics and winner of the slam dunk contest as a rookie. What's impressive about that isn't just that he was a rookie that won the slam dunk contest. It's the fact that he's a point guard, or was a point guard while he was in the league, and he's 6'1". So most of the guys that win the slam dunk contest are not considered the short guys on the court, but a point guard is. So he's 6'1", she's 5'9". He Dee Brown, has gone on after the league and really established a very good career as a coach. He was actually involved with the WNBA and involved with some of the developmental leagues. He's currently an assistant coach for the Sacramento Kings. So the AP News did an article on the father and daughter duo this morning. The headlines read, former NBA star Dee Brown joins daughter Lexi at the Final Four. Lexi Brown wears number 4, the same number her father wore in college at Jacksonville. This season, she was named the All-Big Ten First Team Women's Basketball Player, voted Most Outstanding Player of the Big Ten Tournament, and one of the 3 Terrapins to average in double figures in scoring. As I said, she's 5'9". She's a sophomore guard, same position her dad played. And she's a big reason why Maryland is advanced to the Final Four. Lexi Brown attributes much of her skills to time spent with her father while growing up. She was quoted in saying, "We had a half court in our backyard, so we were always out there," she recalled. Quote, "Then Dad opened up his own training facility in Orlando. That's where we started our journey together, playing basketball in the gym for hours. Those are the moments I remember most vividly when I was younger, and I love them," end quote.
That is such a great story. I haven't heard many father-daughter, you know, stories in sports. I've heard, you know, the most famous one that I'm very familiar with is Tiger Woods and his father, Earl, how he really got him into golf. But it's really great to hear this one regarding Lexi and her father. I also read in that same article, Jay, that he couldn't attend all of the games, obviously, because he's working as the assistant coach. But, and she's very understanding because ESPN had asked her about, you know, I see your father couldn't be here. She's very articulate and well-spoken and humble, and what a great team. The 2015 Women's Final Four, to kind of wrap this up, will have a familiar feel to it with three of last year's teams back in the national semifinals. Apparently, this is the first in a long time that all the top number four seeds, UConn, Notre Dame, Maryland, and South Carolina, were all picked, and they are all going to the Final Four. For the first three, UConn, Notre Dame, and Maryland, they're all repeats, and South Carolina is making its first debut at the actual Final Four. So the last time this happened, where all four of the top seeds made it this far, was in 89 and in 2012. The Huskies, the UConn Huskies, will be trying for their third straight national championship and 10th overall, which would give Gino Auramia into a tie with vaunted UCLA men's coach John Wooden for the most all-time wins. UConn will face Maryland, and Notre Dame plays South Carolina on Sunday at the Amalia Arena in Tampa. So, Jay, who do you think will win, or who are you rooting for?
Well, UConn won it last year, so I'm thinking their chances are pretty strong going up against the Maryland Terps. And, of course, Notre Dame over South Carolina, just because I like the Fighting Irish.
Yeah, it always helps to go for our team, the Fighting Irish. I'm hoping Notre Dame can take the trophy, but we'll see. We'll keep you updated, and we'll have the results in next week's episodes. But formally, congrats to all four teams heading into the Final Four. UConn, Notre Dame, Maryland, and first-time South Carolina, congratulations to all those young ladies, and enjoy your trip to Tampa this weekend.
And now let's move on to another women's sport. What's going on the LPGA front?
Well, another headliner, as you said, March Madness has come to a close, but we still have women making history in the month of March and into April. Lydia Ko, you've heard me mention her name before, she's the number one ranked super golf star. She's only 17 and she's from New Zealand. And guess what, folks? She made headlines again this past week in golf history, most importantly. She is tying Annika Sorenstam's record for the most consecutive subpar rounds at 29 in a row, that she earned with a birdie on her 17th hole just yesterday in the first round of the ANA Inspiration Tournament. Ko and Sorenstam now share the record for all of golf. The PGA Tour record is 26 straight by Tim Petrovic. And this teen has a great chance to own the record again. Or, I'm sorry, she'll take over the record and win it overall if she does well today at the ANA Inspiration as well.
For perspective, I don't really understand the technical nuances of golf, at least not that much. But Neil Reed, sports writer, broke it down for us on his article that we're quoted for the update. So here's his quote. Ko's feat ranks up there in LPGA history, end quote. He compares this achievement to other sports, which is kind of where you have to make the technical comparison. So what would her 29-round streak equate to in other sports? And that would be 20 straight double-doubles in basketball. That's 20 straight games, getting at least 10 points and at least 10 rebounds, or at least 10 points and 10 assists, et cetera, double digits in the key categories, 20 straight games of doing that, or a stretch of 20 straight scoreless innings in baseball, which would be amazing, or 15 consecutive 300-yard passing games in football. So that's pretty impressive, and she's only 17 years old, right? If you equate it to 300 yards a game in football, you're talking about a record that lasted for like 25 years for Dan Marino and then was broken by guys that are going to go down as the best ever to play the sport, you know, a Manning, a Breeze, a Brady, so... A little comparison there. And thanks for stumping me, by the way, on my lack of technical football skills.
That's okay. Well, I think what's more impressive is the fact that, just to give perspective of how big her name is, you know, because it is golf and it's women's golf, which doesn't get a lot of press. So if you're saying that her name would be ranking up there with a Drew Brees and a Dan Marino at 17, that's impressive. So congrats to Lydia Ko, Miss LPGA Teen Wonder, making history at such the old age of 17 and the world of golf. Well, now on to tennis. The trendy Miami Open is in the final stretch, and last night's semifinals was a nail-biter if you watched it. It was between Serena Williams and Romanian Simona Halep. The Tennis Channel and CNN quoted yesterday's match between the two powerhouse women tennis stars as a blockbuster event, and it absolutely was. This wasn't a small matchup. Serena has not lost a tennis match since last October, but Simona has given her one of her worst defeats in history. But she pulled through in the end. Serena won the first round at 6-2, lost the second one 4-6, and then a very close 7-5 win upset last night to beat Simona Halep and move on to the final round of the WTA's most prestigious event. Serena will face Spaniard Suarez Navarro tomorrow in the final round of the Miami Open for the grand purse prize of $900,400.
And that's the same amount that the men's Grand Slam winner won. No?
The winner for the men's will play on Sunday, and that's what's great about the Miami Open. Both the men and women's prize money is equal. True pay equality in the sport of tennis. Let's hope they can lead the way for the other areas of sports. Serena is expected to walk away with her back-to-back win of the Miami Open. She won it last year, but we still wish both women good luck and congratulations for getting this far. One of them will definitely be enjoying their Easter this weekend.
So, good update, Madam Technocrat, and if I could just correct myself, I know we don't want this to be a football show, but the power of Google has proven to me that the record for NFL passing was 337 yards per game, and that was set by Peyton Manning just a couple years ago. So basically that would put her in NFL speak as the best quarterback to go down in history.
And that took him how many years to get that record?
Yeah, I think he was 37 last season or 36 whenever he did it.
Right. And so Lydia's 17, and Anna Sorensen, for is much older than her, but's been working her whole career on that. So Lydia Ko, ladies and gentlemen, pay attention to this 17-year-old powerhouse. You know, everybody was fawning all over Tiger Woods when he was breaking records. I would have to say that she's probably the Tiger Woods right now of golf. I want to be the first one to say that. For her to be such a teen phenomenon at this age and to be breaking those kind of records, really impressive. So when we return, more women headliners. We're moving on to politics and the business world where women are in the news and making headlines. Hillary's email gate hasn't gone away. Carly Fiorina almost announced her candidacy, and the first press official presidential candidate, Ted Cruz, has come out swinging. One of his biggest assets, his wife, making the headlines. More details when we return.
Are you an entrepreneur, coach, or consultant who is tired of constantly searching for the next client? Are you ready to get your expertise out of your head, into the world, and packaged into a profitable online course that delivers a steady stream of your perfect ideal clients to your door and a steady, predictable source of revenue? Hi, this is Janine Blackwell, creator of Create Six-Figure Courses Virtual Bootcamp, and I've created my own seven-figure courses, and I've walked hundreds of experts like you through the step-by-step of creating and launching a profitable online course. I'd like to invite you to a free online training I'm hosting for you called The 7 Steps to Creating and Launching Your Profitable Online Course. I'm going to show you exactly how to create your course, market your course, and automate delivery of it so you can get your course up and running fast and have it work for you 24/7. You can grab your spot for this free training at www.createmyonlinecourse.com. So join me at www.createmyonlinecourse.com.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Inter Pares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital. We can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Inter Pares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome to the Power Lunch, sponsored by Inter Pares Capital, your business partner for all your financing needs. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, joined by my handsome co-host, Jay Como. When we went to break, we had just given you an update on women headliners in the world of sports. Politics seems to be like a sport these days, and women headliners didn't disappoint this week either.
Politics is always like a sport, and I think UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championships. Hillary Clinton remains at the forefront of the political news as email gate continues to be an eyesore for her. The assured Democratic presidential nominee, while not officially announcing her candidacy, but a presumptive candidate and many saying a potential winner, at least those that are backing her, has faced even more scrutiny this week. she declared publicly that she did, in fact, delete the entire remaining parts of her home server. This is the server that housed her Secretary of State emails. No, it wasn't protected somewhere in the government. It was in hers and Bill's apartment. So there are now no other emails that can be turned over to the government, even if they were subpoenaed.
And NPR did an article on the case yesterday titled Fact Check, Hillary Clinton, Those Emails, and the Law. Now, the essence of the article maintains that Hillary may have not violated the actual written letter of the law, but she definitely violated the spirit of the law and what was intended to protect government-related communication. And, you know, visuals are telling. The NPR article had a picture of Hillary with a sort of comical gesture as the header of the article, with her hands out as if she's saying, well, that's all, folks. And what exactly are we talking about here in regards to the laws that people continue to talk about? Well, the article, it's very good. We'll post it on our social media site so you can follow it. At issue are four sections of the law: the Federal Records Act, the Freedom of Information Act, or commonly referred to as the acronym FOIA, the National Archives and the Records Administration NARA regulations, and Section 1924 of Title 18 of the U.S. Crimes and Criminal Procedure Act. Well, in short, the Federal Records Act requires agencies to hold on to official communications, including all work-related emails. So that's the first one that people are quoting, and government employees are not allowed to destroy any relevant records. So that's the Federal Records Act. The FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, is designed to improve public access to agency records and information. So that's more for transparency. The NARA regulations, the National Archives and Records, dictate how records should be created and maintained. They stress that the materials must be maintained by the agency or the government, and they should be readily found, and that records must make possible a proper scrutiny by the Congress in the future. And the last one, Section 1924 of Title 18, has to do with the deletion and retention of classified documents, quote, knowingly removing or housing classified information at an unauthorized location is subject to a fine or a year in prison. All seem kind of relevant. Well, that's the reason why there's this fact check article that's kind of out there to kind of give perspective as to how much this has really grown since it's come to light that Hillary has been using her own emails and storing that at her own home. While Clinton did not use an official government email account while serving as the country's top diplomat, the article goes on to say instead she used a private email account and kept all of her emails on a private server at her home. The server, as Jay had mentioned, has been wiped clean, according to the Republican-led Benghazi committee, as they were told. Well, at a news conference last month, Hillary did say that she needed to keep all of her emails at home because of convenience. That was her primary reason. And she said the convenience was because she did not want to carry around two mobile devices, which we've debated, but she did acknowledge that it might have not been smart to do so. Well, the law was amended in 2014 to require that personal emails be transferred to government servers within 20 days. That was after Clinton left office, and the watchdog groups can see that she may have not violated the text of the law, but again, as the article highlights, Sunlight Foundation's John Wunderlich explained to Horsley is that she might have violated, well, not that might have, she definitely has violated the spirit of the law. The other thing that's killing a lot of critics is that Hillary was the determining factor on what was turned over to Congress. She was the one who decided what was deemed as relevant and not. And that's where, for the Freedom of Information Act, you've got both Gawker Media and the Associated Press. They've announced that they are suing to have Clinton and her spokesman's emails all released. So Clinton being the filter for what was relevant to work and what was not is definitely making a lot of pundits and a lot of critics saying that this is what can't be trusted. The fact that she's deleted all of her emails off her server has created a frenzy in the media and by the critics, both in the government and outside of the government, in the media, stating Hillary should at least turn over the server, even though it's her personal server, and then they will determine whether or not, in fact, all of the emails have been deleted. Now, that being the case, we've heard a little bit less and less of that in the last week because other things have taken front and center, Jay, like the Iran nuclear deal, correct?
Yeah, well, let's let other things take front and center, whatever it is. I mean, certainly the Iran nuclear deal is a catastrophic mess where we shouldn't be negotiating with Iran at all, and many don't like the plan, even from the left, but that's a whole different story. I mean, we could talk about anything in the media to get away from Emailgate, which is, I think, part of the issue. It's interesting. It's like saying, hey, we think you committed a crime and you're being subpoenaed, and would you please give us the information that we believe proves your guilt? And then, but if you don't want to, don't. I mean, really? Come on. Yeah. So how about this? I would like for the presumptive and eventual Democratic nominee, Republican nominee, and eventual president of this nation to both practice common sense, both in spirit and in the letter of common sense. How about that?
That would be great. And I'm a little amazed, if anything, that she, and I think we've seen this, she was trying to take away from the focus of Emailgate, and she came out publicly this week focusing on the Iran deals and negotiations with the White House, which I don't think has done her any benefit. What's your thoughts on that?
There is no benefit for her speaking of her time. Anything that ties back to Secretary of State business. And it was a horrible tenure. Benghazi was a catastrophic mess. This nation didn't take enough, I think, action on what happened to the ambassador. Then you've got the Russian reset button that basically made her look like a fool, that they weren't just tied in. Their job is to be tied in. They're really supposed to be the behind the scenes. They know what's going on. There's only so much that politicians can and, for the most part, want to share with the public America, public world. They have to keep some of this stuff secret because they've got, you know, they've got competing interests. We've got a lot of bad guys out there that can't be in the know on everything. She should have known what was going on with Ukraine and with Russia, and she didn't. I mean, if it were me, I wouldn't want to talk about my failed tenure as the Secretary of State. I would not want to talk about anything about it, because it is just that. To say that foreign policy has been anything but a failure in the last 6 years. And you can argue back to the other administration, but let's not go too far back. We're talking about candidates now. It's a waste of time. It does them no justice. There needs to be something else to ride on.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I'm a little amazed that she came out this week to speak on the Iran nuclear deal, because, to your point, you want to distance yourself as far away as possible as reminding people that you were the Secretary of State. I mean, that's why the Benghazi issue has been so big for her, and why the email
is
so prominent because of Benghazi. Or say nothing, because I do think, unfortunately,
come out
for her.
It. Have an opinion.
Or come
you don't
out
work for the
it.
Administration anymore.
Yeah, well, she didn't, and she's hurting in the polls in terms of credibility. So the Emailgate has definitely taken a toll on her. The issue continues to take front and center again with the Benghazi hearing coming up again in terms of the server, and everyone knows it's not going to be delivered to them. And then you still have the Associated Press suing her via the Freedom of Information Act. If anything, I personally believe that Hillary needs to do something great to happen for her in the news. And honestly, I think she needs to come out and just say she's running for president and just do that now, because speculating about running for president, I think at this point in her in the media, is actually hurting her, because number one, it shows she can't be decisive. And number two, now you've got articles being written and you have people going out there talking about whether or not she can still run for president and whether or not now she should not run at all because her chances are being hurt. Jay, what do you think?
Well, I think it's interesting. I do think we both agree that you need to, if you're going to run, you need to run. If you're indecisive about whether you want to lead this nation, then you shouldn't lead this nation. It's as simple as that. And there's
a
lot
of
distraction.
Job.
Yes. Yeah. And if you don't think it is, then I don't want you to apply for it. So former governor of Maryland, Martin O'Malley, was on the Sunday talk shows this last week. And he historically, he's been a Clinton supporter. And when he was asked about presidential candidates, while he didn't mention names, he just said the presidency of the United States is not some crown to be passed between two families. It's an awesome and sacred trust to be earned.
That was interesting, because what he did, and there were articles written about that, is he's talking about the Bushes and the Clintons. And to your point, he never said Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton. And I don't disagree with what he's saying. He basically took, and there was, I think, an article in the New York Times or in the Washington or the Wall Street Journal that basically said Martin O'Malley took a shot at Hillary and he never once mentioned her name. But the essence of what he's saying is actually not far from what I think a lot of Americans are feeling. I think it's a sad day for our democracy that our bench for candidates is so thin on great leaders for this nation that it can only come down to two families for our generation. I mean, if you think about it, we're talking about either a third Bush or a second Clinton within the last 30 years of presidents. And it's not that they should not be heralded, these two great families, Bushes and the Clintons, for creating great legacy for serving this nation. But there's, what, over 600 million people in this country? We don't have more leaders that we can see as viable candidates?
Well, I agree. I think his comments were well constructed. He took a shot at two potential contenders in the legacy Clinton and Bush clans. But I tend to see it a little differently. I don't see Hillary as the best option for the Democrats, given the missteps as Secretary of State. The email fiasco is horrible, post-Secretary of State. You know, oh, I deleted it, sorry. I just don't see it, right? And I don't see it for Jeb either. And there's just other options. I don't think it's going to come down to these two families. I think it's going to come down to, and I don't even think they're going to be close. If you think about it, first and foremost, I think Martin O'Malley could be a great candidate on the left. The guy ran for state senate his first race ever, and lost by 44 votes, was actually going into election night ahead, kind of out. He was an unknown underdog candidate and went up against a one-term incumbent, so not a long-time Democratic operative, but certainly a sitting state senator, and so he lost by 44 votes. Then ran for Baltimore City Council, where he had successful tenures, and then was the mayor of Baltimore, and then eventually the governor of Maryland. He's got an impeccable resume. He looks presidential, and he's doing smart Machiavellian things out overtly in the public, as we're talking about this particular article at this point. So and he doesn't have a failed tenure as Secretary of State, and so I don't think he's lost an election since his first bid. And so you got that on the left. You've got others. And on the right, there's a lot of guys out there, and there's unfortunately not a lot of women on the right. I think that's kind of – there's Carly, who I don't know – I think it would be tough not having any elected office experience. But there's still other candidates. I think crossing genders, I still think that it's not going to go to either one of those two families in my view.
Well, as you were stating, onto other women headliner in politics, Carly Fiorina did make headlines this past week and agreed that she's still kind of a long shot. But she's actually been very active in the media circuit and touring the country as she prepares to announce her candidacy. Now, as I talk about decisiveness, she did come out and say she's 90% sure this past week that she's joining, and so she'll be making the official announcement, I believe, in the next few weeks. Her hard work is paying off. A few weeks ago, she didn't get as much press as she is now. The media is starting to take her serious. The frenzy over Indiana's reaction to the religious freedom law put Carly front and center as she took on Tim Cook, who put out an op-ed, a scathing op-ed, and it was extremely vocal and chastising the Indiana governor and his state recently. Carly was interviewed yesterday by the Wall Street Journal, and she condemned Tim Cook's reaction as, quote, a level of hypocrisy that really is unfortunate. She was pretty strong. She also went on to state, when Tim Cook is upset about all the places he does business because of the way they treat gays and women, then he needs to withdraw from 90% of the markets he's in, especially China and Saudi Arabia. But I don't hear him being upset about that. Jay, what's your thought on Carly?
First, my thoughts on her commentary. It's interesting. Be careful which stone you want to throw, because you might end up having some collateral damages. You might be living in a glass house. So I like the analysis that, okay, you want to make fun of, or you want to take a hard stance against Indiana and debate. And I don't even want to debate the merits of the law, even though it's already in federal law, 29 other states, I believe. But if you're going to take a strong stance, you should probably ensure you're not aiding and abetting the same thing in other places. So it's a good kind of return serve, if you will. But I think she's sort of the anti-Palin, if you will. If she doesn't get the Republican nod and win the primaries, or if she does and doesn't become president of the U.S., she's doing so many other things that are important for women, that are important for conservative values, and important for, I think, America, for the good, right? You can debate philosophically if you're left or right, but to say that there's nothing good about being center or right of center would be a fallacy and a lie. And I think a lot of the things that she champions are within that sweet spot of, they're traditionally right of center issues, but they're issues that are important, and they're not idealistic and they're not demagoguery. So I think that she will add a lot of value whether she wins the primaries or the presidency because of her activism. We spoke about her activism in previous episodes as well. Whereas Palin, who came out and had a great speech, but was still a sitting governor when McCain didn't win the ticket, when he lost to Obama, And so she was the vice presidential nominee, as we all know. And she was still a sitting governor and had recently just got elected. And rather than serving her state, serving her constituents, and serving the party in the job that she had applied for and won, the governor of Alaska, she decided to step down and go out and do whatever she's been doing since then. She's on Fox, and she's written books, and she speaks in campaigns for Tea Party candidates. I don't know that she's done anyone as much justice as she should have done as being a very good governor of Alaska. I see Carly either going all the way, and if not, the consolation prize is she'll do great things for this country.
She will, and hopefully, I mean, she did come out publicly and say that she isn't trying to vie for a VP seat because she was specifically asked for that. She was very strong, saying she truly does believe that she can win the Republican ticket and take it all the way. So let's see how far that goes. I do think that by either the next two episodes here at the Power Lunch, we will be talking about her official candidacy for running for president, and we'll see how Carly continues to challenge both, you know, Hillary as well as other contenders for the presidential nomination. Well, let's wrap it up on politics. Ted Cruz, as we had stated, is the only candidate right now, and it's April 2015, that has officially announced his candidacy. And focus for women in the news has been his wife, Ms. Heidi Nelson Cruz. She is a powerhouse herself, a managing director at Goldman Sachs. And for those of you not familiar with Wall Street rankings or financial services, managing directors are very senior positions or executive level positions and usually report directly into the chiefs. She was or is the regional head of Goldman's Houston office in the private wealth management division. That division serves accounts with larger than $40 million with the firm. She was promoted to that position in 2013 after being a vice president for 7 years. She announced a leave of absence this past few weeks as her and her husband focus on the 2016 campaigning. Jay, what do you know about her so far?
So I agree with everything you said about her role. She was earlier, so back in 1999, she was an economic advisor on Bush Cheney 2000. She was then an economic policy in Bush Cheney 2000, went on to become director of Western Hemisphere for the National Security Council. This is all, by the way, from her LinkedIn page, and did some more work in the Western Hemisphere for the White House as well. So she's pretty politically connected, and she's got an impeccable resume as well, and the role that she just recently took a leave from is a very powerful position dealing with high-net-worth clients.
And she did a few interviews with the Today Show and other morning shows after her husband announced his official run. Now, she's extremely articulate, and many of her see her as one of Ted Cruz's strongest assets because she's a successful working mother. And I know that sounds kind of funny, but the National Media Review did an article on her titled Ted Cruz's Not-So-Secret Weapon, His Wife. One of the main reasons is there's finally a serious Republican candidate who has a working wife. Now, that's not a slam on candidates that have stay-at-home moms, but it has hurt the Republican candidates when combating women's equality. The article specifically states, and again, we'll put this on our site so you guys can follow this, is that one of the biggest toughest issues that the Republican candidates have is to provide a basically refuting Democrat claims that Republicans pine for a 1950s type domestic wife and life. While Heidi's resume has insulated her from some of the attacks leveled against the wives of Republican president candidates in the last cycle, Lisa Miller wrote for the New York Magazine saying that the Republican Party's retrograde attitude toward the role of women in the world and in marriage would find center stage in the personas of an Ann Romney and Jana Ryan, citing their decisions to take on the role of a stay-at-home mom. The article continues to state that the strength that they have in Heidi Cruz is the fact that her being a working mom also shows in comparison to former presidents, that she basically would bring more to the table as a first wife, as the first lady, something akin to what Bill Clinton did, and in fact, you know, President Obama, because Michelle was also a working mother and had her own career. So it is being cited for the Republican nominations that she may be the only working wife, and that might will be a huge asset for Ted Cruz as both him and his wife try to combat the negative opinions of Republicans and whether or not they support women equality as well as working women. Janie,
so what's
your thoughts on Ms. Cruz?
Yes, what the article said was she brings more to the table than any other spouse in the field, except for maybe Bill Clinton. So remember, Bill's a spouse now if Hillary gets elected or goes into the primaries. And what they're saying is she brings as much except for perhaps Bill, but she doesn't have the baggage. And where Ted Cruz is, can be toxic's a strong word, but a bit annoying. She she's apparently very endearing and charming. She's divisive and she's more, I think she's much more conciliatory. So there's that. And I also think just your comments about the stay-at-home mom, the Stepford wife, if you will. It's interesting. Those Republicans are so bad. They make their women stay home and look after their family and their children and make a home. Like, hey, by the way, that's not a bad thing. Perhaps, I don't know, I'm going to go out on a limb. Perhaps Paul Ryan's wife or Mitt Romney's wife, maybe they're kind of their own person and they made a personal decision that they want to be in their children's lives and they can afford to do it and they want to do it. I don't think it's because they married a Republican. I guess the suggestion is perhaps if Paul Ryan's wife married a Democrat, she wouldn't be a stay-at-home mom. Is that basically what they're saying?
Yeah, I don't think anyone is basically going right out and saying that, but to your point, what it implies that the women have to give up their careers, and that was kind of one of the things that the article had stated, that Heidi's not a martyr because she's actually taking some time off to focus on the career, and neither are, in fact, to your point, Mitt Romney's wife, as well as the other gentleman that you had mentioned. So I think it's unfair to say, well, first off, for all working moms out there, or working fathers, or stay-at-home parents, you can't say that, and I don't think it's fair to paint them with a broad brush, that they've done something in terms of martyring themselves and are less successful because they decided to take care of their kids, which is the most important thing that you could do out there. But I do like Heidi's background, her strength, and I also think they're kind of a power couple. You kind of have to like that, which is what was so appealing about the Obamas, and it was appealing about the Clintons, and we finally have a Republican power couple, and that's inspiring to see. So do I think that he could be at the top? Hey, listen, he's got a great groundswell of support. He's been doing a lot of grassroots fundraising. He's already come out there, and he's impressed a lot of the critics in the media. And people are saying, hey, listen, you know, we didn't think Obama could do it, you know, 8 years ago or 6 years ago. He's kind of on that same path, and it is humanly possible that he could win. So I'm sure we will continue to read more on Heidi and her husband, Ted, because they are the only ones that have officially announced that they're in the race. We'll wrap up our first half and let's go to break. When we come back, we've got more women entrepreneurs who are making headlines and our analysis of the Ellen Powell verdict. More when we return.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Inter Pares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does. Whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Inter Pares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
She's smart. She's successful. She's an executive. She's an entrepreneur. And she's the chief executive of her story. Who is she? She's you. Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour, keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch, sponsored by Inter Pares Capital, your business partner for all your commercial financing needs. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, joined by co-host, good-looking and handsome partner, Jay Como. We are the only news talk radio show focusing on women headliners for the week. We bring you all this and more, and we ensure you have one stop to hear all your women powerhouses and trailblazers.
I'm certainly glad that I'm in charge of your prescription eyeglasses. Welcome back to the second half as well. I always love the segments that we do on entrepreneurs because it's near and dear to both of us. But first, a big announcement this week from Netflix. They added to their board of directors Anne Sweeney, former Disney executive. Sweeney was formerly co-chair of Disney Media Networks and president of Disney ABC Television Group. She announced last December that she was leaving Disney full-time to be a TV director.
This is a great story because I was worried originally that when she resigned from Disney, she announced it earlier last year in March, and basically played out the rest of the year. And I was, you know, it's great that she wanted to be a TV director, but really nervous that we would lose such a great woman powerhouse in Hollywood. And thankfully, she's joining the Netflix board, and that will not deter her influence. A little background on Miss Sweeney. I'm pretty impressed with her. She, and we always love to share stories of these great influential and powerful women to inspire you. The 56-year-old mother of two received her undergraduate from College of New Rochelle and her graduate degree from Harvard. Prior to Disney, she was a chairman and CEO of FX Networks. She is cited as being over the launch of two cable networks, FX, the entertainment network, and FXM, the movies from Fox. That's Hollywood's first studio-based movie network. Her accolades are long, already inducted into the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame back in 2005, and she's a regular on Forbes Most Powerful Women and Fortune's Most Powerful Women in Business. Netflix picks up a huge asset with given all of her experience with her credentials and adding her to the board. What do you think, Jay?
Well, I think as they continue to grow, they've clearly changed their business model. They went from being a mail service for DVDs into digital media, and then from digital media where they resell, they started their own productions, as we know. And they've, as they go through these iterations and changes, it's very helpful to have a strong operating executive on top of you. And so having her on the board, I think, will help. She's worked for some powerhouse companies. Disney's a very, very well-run organization. And having that expertise in the boardroom, coaching and counseling their executive committee, I think, will be paramount. I think it's a great investment. And I'm just wondering, I'm hopeful that putting another woman on the board, a strong woman on the board, if perhaps her influence can sink down less on the operating side, more on the creative side, and in season four of House of Cards, maybe Claire Underwood can get back and get her mojo back.
Yeah, we're going to do an episode on that. You know, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of an insight. Jay and I have watched, we're devout House of Cards. We used to be worshippers, and the last season was not one that we're particularly proud of. We're going to do an episode here probably in the next week because we wanted to give everyone a chance to actually get through all the episodes and not have a spoiler. But we do want to comment on what has happened to the Claire Underwood character. And to your point, let's hope Anne being on the board, she can help influence some more women powerhouses. But I have to admit, we started following Anne when we were doing research for the article. We did follow her on Twitter. And much like Jay and I have learned, it takes a while to get used to if you're not as savvy as this next generation. And I just assume because she's a Hollywood powerhouse that she probably had hundreds of thousands of Twitter followers. I think she has like 800 or 200, something small. And the Hollywood Reporter interviewed her last December, and it was interesting to read in the report that she just joined Twitter last December and also posted her first tweet. So she did at least tweet out when she joined the Netflix board about her excitement, so that was good. But we've learned, Jay, especially when it comes to Twitter, that's something that we're getting better at.
Well, first of all, not we. You are fantastic at it. You've made the journey into social media. You've done it flawlessly. I, on the other hand, pride myself on being an old-school guy, and unfortunately that translates into me being a little slow to the curve on social media. I still like reading newspapers. I still like books, like physical books. I have a library that I'm very proud of, and not so many people are impressed with it these days because everything's digitized. But I personally can understand firsthand the learning curve on it, and I haven't. It's the curve that I have not come up across yet.
Yeah, but I think you're going to do great, especially when we start posting all of your blogs out there. Well, let's move on to another up-and-comer, young entrepreneur Nancy Liu. She is the CEO of NPlug. She made headlines this past week in Forbes, who has started a new series called The Self-Made Woman, featuring women who have come from a world without power or wealth, but with the support of family and teachers and mentors, they have found their way to success. Well, Nancy is the third in the feature of this series.
This young lady really worked her way to the top. Her parents and her emigrated to the United States when she was 5 years old. She was a natural competitor. She was a competitive pianist, an all-American cheerleader, student government, and in beauty pageants, to name a few. Her competitive spirit won her numerous scholarships, which she ultimately used to pay her way to UC Berkeley.
And that's where she launched her first venture. I read in the same article that she met this attractive guy at a dive bar. So she's went to a dive bar and she saw this guy who she thought was pretty good looking in Colorado. And she was so impressed with him in fact, actually his resume. So when she started talking to him, she realized that he was an MIT graduate pursuing his PhD. You got to love this. So Nancy's pickup line was, I don't care about dating you because my bar for dating a guy is much lower than my bar for working with someone. And since you're at the higher bar, I don't want to date you. I'd rather start working with you. Don't you love it? And that night, they talked about stem cell research way into the evening and in the morning, and collagen regeneration. That's pretty romantic. And that was the beginning of a great platonic working relationship. And they certainly made magic together, and that's money.
So that's certainly a way to win a guy's heart. I'm just thinking this thing through, and I'm wondering if you married me because I'm not smart enough for you to work with me. Clearly you worked for them on the business
You've got
front.
It both.
Nancy and her partner launched Nanoly Bioscience, a company that is developing a chemical shield that allows vaccines to survive without refrigeration. She's already on her next venture, Nplug, as we mentioned, and this is a software company transforming public display into intelligent displays. You know the big display with static data, right? Nplug has created a way for the displays to be interactive, so you can post tweets and Instagram photos directly onto that display. 2-year-old venture has already won Entrepreneur's Top 30 Startups to Watch, and she's not even 30 yet.
That's impressive. And I read that she was inspired by this. And you know, Jane, you and I have talked a lot about, what's that movie, Minority Report? How that was so, you know,
Colin
kind of like
Farrell
Star Wars, right? You
and get Tom Cruise.
Right. And she said that her inspiration, she didn't say Minority Report, but she said that she was inspired by watching a lot of movies that talked about futuristic displays. And how, remember how there, I think it is Minority Report, that there's a lot of interactive, I think there's a couple of other movies. Well, she said, okay, it was in the movies. I don't see why we couldn't create it. And so Forbes, you know, I can absolutely see why they picked her up as one of the features for the self-made woman. She sounds like she will be a serial entrepreneur, to be honest with you, because if she's already, what, at 24, she's already created two she's already created two things that are completely unrelated to each other, one that has to deal with vaccines and another thing that has to deal with display. So she's definitely an entrepreneur, I think a serial entrepreneur, and I wouldn't be surprised if she's going to be, you know, on Shark Tank in the future as one of their new sharks. Well, you can read more about Nancy Liu in the Forbes article by following us on Twitter. We'll post the article and others that we have on Nancy.
And since we're talking about the next generation of women entrepreneurs, they seem to be getting younger with each report. Let's talk about Michelle Phan. Now, this is a story.
Yes, Nancy Liu's story has me inspired to work harder. Michelle Phan's story just blows me away. And we've talked about her in the past because I think we talked about her in Forbes, Fortune's 30 Under 30 list, or that might have been Forbes. She's a name that you've heard of. You've probably seen her face. You must have, because the 7.5 million people have, or at least a billion times in terms of following. She was 18 years old, Michelle Phan was 18 years old when she became a YouTube sensation with her videos on how to apply makeup. The interesting thing is that she was originally declined to work at the Lancôme makeup counter, and she applied to, I think, at her nearest mall. They said that she wasn't qualified to be a makeup artist. Well, guess what, folks? That inspired her to begin creating her own YouTube videos. After her YouTube following went super platinum viral, a Lancôme representative, ironically, reached out to her to be their first official makeup artist.
Can you imagine if they would have hired her at first? She maybe wouldn't have found the motivation. So her rise to YouTube sensation has been groundbreaking, and she's to the point now where the YouTube executives actually collaborate with her on the success of their videos, because as she makes money, they make money. So she has over 7.5 million followers, and her videos in total have been viewed a billion times. She's got ad revenue for all of those that watch, and so she's become a young millionaire herself, and she's also used that money to start Ipsy, one of the fastest-growing startup beauty companies.
I think I'm the only one that has yet to subscribe to pay for Ipsy, because all of my Sephora points get me hundreds of free items. But if you don't know about Ipsy, her concept is on fire. Ipsy subscribers pay $10 a month for what's called a glam bag, and they're basically beauty samples. You know, the stuff that you get in the store. And if you go to a makeup counter and you get free fragrances or free beauty lotions or things to supply, well, for $10, you get a $10 bag full of all of these luxury items. So she's partnered with all of the great big beauty companies for this. Well, this is hard for men to understand, but women love these free beauty samples because ultimately it's the fastest way to get your product into the hands of new clients. And I'm a huge fan for it because I am one of those people that I actually buy from free samples. And so I think it's a great concept, and it's definitely moving forward.
The sampling business makeup is clearly fit for a great business model. You're a good consumer and recipient. Her company has generated $120 million in sales and continues to grow. Ipsy now has over 1 million subscribers, and soon to be one more with you joining potentially. So Michelle made headlines this past week in Entrepreneur Magazine as Ipsy was rivaling bigger name Birchbox, giving them something to worry about. I would have never thought that the sampling space of beauty products could be so huge, $120 million in sales, and she's the smaller of the two versus Birchbox. It's this, just like her YouTube, right? That's, she created an industry. She's worth $3 million. And she generated $84 million in ad revenue just from YouTube, and now she's got this other niche that didn't even know this was an industry.
Yes, and it's absolutely growing. Birchbox is a little different. It sells also full-size beauty products, and they have raised $72 million in venture capital. So they do have the financial backing to grow even larger. But Michelle Phan, I mean, what you're doing, what they're competing against is her brand. While Birchbox has got more investment capital, Michelle's got 7.5 million followers, which have in turn created organic growth for Ipsy, and she's very proud of the fact that she hasn't done a ton of marketing. It's her YouTube followers that have done the marketing for her. It's a great pipeline into her business, and it's a natural complement for her videos. So get folks, you know, her idea, get folks eager about looking great with her makeup application videos, and then get them excited about the luxury beauty products coming in the mail every month. I mean, genius idea for her.
And she's not done. She's made other headlines for the launch of Icon, her new global online video network, in collaboration with a Dutch production company, Endermol. Glamour magazine writer Megan Angelo wrote a story on Femme 2 days ago titled, Why I Believe Michelle Phan is the Next Oprah.
Yes, and that article has gone viral on Twitter as well, with other authors and writers weighing in on whether Michelle Phan could step up to Oprah. And if anything, you got to give Michelle credit. She's a high-octane, very young entrepreneur that has charisma. And I say that because she is actually the creator and editor of all of her YouTube videos. She is the master and creator of her own work, which means she knows and she controls the power of her brand. Oprah has always been in control of her brand and her image, and you couple that with Michelle's already strong following on YouTube, she capitalizes on every aspect of her followers. And so she's definitely going to be a powerhouse entrepreneur on the beauty business, and clearly her eyes are focused on the media business as well, hence the comparisons with her and Oprah.
So that reminds me of someone else, and those that follow Silicon Valley might think that I'm talking about the late, great Steve Jobs, who equally had control over every aspect of it. But I don't have to go far, and I don't have to go into the afterlife to think of someone else. I'm sitting across from someone who controls their products the same way. Hint, hint. Nudge, nudge.
Yes, if I could get 7.5 million followers, dear, this would be a great day. Well, that should have supercharged your week to go out there and do more. If anything, Ann Sweeney, Nancy Liu, and Michelle Phan are clearly taking charge and ensuring their place in history is cemented. This continues to build on the foundation for future women executives and entrepreneurs, so we should be grateful to them. Congratulations to all three ladies for making the headlines this past week and for their achievements. We will post their stories on our social media sites for you to read up on them as well.
So let's take a break and on to our last segment. The most widely followed case in Silicon Valley has come to a close. Alan Powell versus Kleiner Perkins, the largest gender discrimination lawsuit ever in the Bay Area. More when we return.
I'm looking for a certain kind of woman, and I think you know her. She's an entrepreneur that is highly connected, successful, significant in her own industry, and considered the go-to woman in her community. She's received so much from so many women in business, she's ready to give back to others on their journey, lifting as she climbs. Hi, this is Sandra Yancey, and I'm the founder and CEO of eWomen Network. I'm looking to connect with the woman I've just described who lives in your community so that we might have a conversation about how eWomen Network's proven success system can provide her a platform to elevate her success and ability to support women in business. Our international community of managing directors are influencing the speed of success for women in business around the world. If that sounds like something that you want to be part of or know someone we should talk with, send an email to managingdirector@eWomenNetwork.com. That's managingdirector@eWomenNetwork.com, and let's start the conversation.
Did you know banks decline more commercial loans than they approve? In fact, national banks approve less than 20% of all business loans submitted. And that doesn't include the loans that don't even qualify. But at Inter Pares Capital, we are here to overcome those odds. We are a nationally recognized commercial brokerage firm with access to thousands of public and private lending institutions. That means we have more options to finance you than your bank does, whether you are a startup or in need of debt refinancing or growth capital, we can help. We do the heavy lifting so you can focus on running your business. Contact us today for a free consultation with one of our business advisors at 855-365-1930. At Inter Pares Capital, we are your business partner in finance.
You're connected to the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to the Power Lunch on EWN Radio Network. Your Power Lunch Hour keeping you informed of women in the headlines and making their own news. And now here's your host, Mona Lisa Como.
Welcome back to the Power Lunch, sponsored by Inter Pares Capital. If you are a business or investor in search of private equity or venture capital, talk to one of our Inter Pares Capital advisors to review your business plan and discuss your opportunities for growth. I'm your host, Mona Lisa Como, with my handsome co-host, Jay Como.
Welcome back, everyone, to our last segment. If you live in the Bay Area, you've been following this case for several months. If you've been on the venture capital side of things, you've been in front of this front and center of this case as well, most likely. Ellen Pao joined Kleiner Perkins in 2005, a well-known venture capital firm in Silicon Valley. She was the chief of staff for the chief technical officer, John Doerr, a senior partner. On May 10, 2012, Pao filed a gender discrimination lawsuit against her employer, alleging workplace retaliation by a male junior partner resulting from their personal relationship. She continued to work at the firm until October 1st, when, according to her, she was terminated and, according to the defendant, was offered a five-month transition with pay to an operating role. But when she rejected their offer, terminated effectively on October 31st, 2012. Her lawyer said she was fired in retaliation for her lawsuit. The complaint was amended to add that cause of action. The firm said Pao was terminated for performance reasons unrelated to the lawsuit. The case went to trial on February 24th, and the verdict was announced this past week in favor of Kleiner Perkins.
And this case drew national media attention for several reasons. The first, because there has been so much focus on women entrepreneurs and gender discrimination in Silicon Valley. Now, if you remember, we reported on this, and it was in one of our first shows in 2015. Newsweek drew criticism and acclaim for their headlining magazine cover, the January 28th magazine cover, titled What Silicon Valley Really Thinks of Women. And if you remember, I can still see the image. It was a picture of a woman, kind of a cartoon image of a woman in a red skirt, in a red dress, and then the mouse kind of pointing and lifting up her skirt. Well, the cover story highlighted the stories of many women entrepreneurs and their struggle in approaching male-dominated venture capital firms. All of the stories in the Newsweek feature told of disgusting tales where men were asking for sexual favors from these women entrepreneurs, or even worse, the story that just completely makes me disgusted was when one man asked a woman to reach under the table when they were apparently done talking about negotiations. And she received funding, he tried to stick her hand in his pants. So if anything, the Newsweek article has shed light on the challenges for women entrepreneurs and the fact that Silicon Valley is not only a male-dominated industry, but really a bad old fraternity.
I also think the article was somewhat of a call to action that more women need to be on the venture capital side of the table. If more women were on the venture capital side, it would undoubtedly change the environment for women entrepreneurs. So I agree that the Newsweek magazine cover did create a landscape for Ellen Pao because motions were and sensitivities about gender discrimination were so high in Silicon Valley and still very fresh.
Yeah, and the case only lasted 3 weeks. So every sordid detail. So the case went live, I think, February 24th, and every sordid detail of the case was tweeted live out of the courts and into our living room and newsfeed. And if you were in the Bay Area, you know, whether it was the San Francisco Chronicle or the San Jose Mercury News or Vallejo News in Sacramento, this was on every single news station and updated every night for the entire 3 weeks. And we mentioned one of the women who went from Wall Street to Silicon Valley last week when we were talking about Ruth Porat, the new CFO, the $70 million CFO over at Google. Well, Mary Meeker was also one of the women who left Wall Street to go to Silicon Valley. And interestingly enough, she actually took the stand last week in favor of Kleiner Perkins, who is currently her employer. And she defended her firm, calling it one of the friendliest environments for women to thrive in for venture capital and technology. So obviously going against what Ellen Powell's claim was. But in the end, the courts decided that there was not enough evidence that Kleiner Perkins had retaliated against Ellen Powell or discriminated against her as well.
So the research on this case was really all over the place, whether this was really a loss or net neutral for women in Silicon Valley. Some see it as a win, in fact. A group of technology women in Silicon Valley took out a full-page ad in the Palo Alto Daily Post with a solid backdrop with big white letters in the center of the page simply titled, "Thank You, Ellen." Then others took to Twitter with the hashtag Thank You Ellen Powell, which was retweeted around the world by many supporters of Ellen's case. So what do you, I mean, you've been through, this is a gyration. It's happening in Silicon Valley now, and we stated earlier, the more women that work in venture capital will change it. More women went into Wall Street and changed it. You were a part of that. What do you think? Is this a win or a loss or a draw?
Well, I think of course I'm going to make it difficult to answer that, but I do think it's both. Let's first talk about the verdict. I do think unequivocally the courts have set a precedent that I'm uncomfortable with on the evidence of proving gender bias and discrimination. I'm so used to being in leadership, and when it comes to zone of influence and you have somebody in your team that has entered into a unscrupulous personal relationship and it is boss and subordinate, or it's even within the leadership ranks, so it's not your direct boss, we've always been taught by our HR executives and our legal team, hey, you're getting into an area where if gone to court, we would have lost this. And while I don't support frivolous lawsuits, I do believe in the world of human resources, of having, you know, reviews and promotions. When a company states that it's a performance issue and your job is subjective, meaning you're not transactional, there's no data to say, you know, today you process 1,000 transactions and tomorrow you did 800. When it's a decline in performance and it's subjective, I think that's harder to prove. And in this case with Ellen Powell, I do think the courts did her and just gender discrimination a huge disservice in saying that there was not enough evidence to prove retaliation or gender bias. For goodness sakes, the gentleman who she had an affair with was fired and was in a senior position, and her performance went down after that in the eyes of her employer after she came forth. I mean, doesn't that feel like it isn't helping the cause of gender discrimination or retaliation, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about the case as to whether the right verdict was arrived at. And I can just say as a husband and as a father, I just wish the case wouldn't have happened. Right. If it seems murky and gray, it was a really bad situation. At worst, you've got discrimination that occurred and went unjustified. So there's no winning in this unless, you know, firms in not just Silicon Valley, but across the world you just can't do certain things. There needs to be a place where women can go to work and feel comfortable and not be discriminated or retaliated against. Still out, there's something with this case, right? The shade of it, of the gray or black, is hard for me to see from this vantage point, but I don't like any of it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, and you know, we know this being in leadership positions, the case could have easily not come to trial, honestly, had they done an out-of-court settlement. Yeah, they should have settled. And on the flip side, so if you say if this is a win or a loss, so I think it's a loss in the terms of the verdict. I think that it sets a legal precedence on the type of evidence to prove a decline in performance. On the flip side, I still think it's a win for women in Silicon Valley, despite the verdict. And I think technology and venture capital companies will be far more sensitive to this, to gender discrimination. And awareness is the first step in ensuring your firm has policies that do not discriminate. No one wants to be the next Kleiner Perkins. And I think that that's where the loss is for Kleiner Perkins and the win for women working in technology and firms that don't have very strong policies. Nobody wants to be the next Kleiner Perkins, and the reputational damage for Kleiner Perkins, I think, is a bigger loss of capital. Many average day folks did not even know who Kleiner Perkins was before this went to trial, and now they are forever embodied as the firm in the largest gender discrimination case in Silicon Valley. So if I'm an entrepreneur, which I am, and I want to find a firm to back me in terms of my investment, do you think I'm going to go to Kleiner Perkins? No, I mean, there's that stigma already attached, and I know they're going to make right with it, but still, you've got that baggage. And I do think that that hurts them in the future more so than had they tried to settle with her outside of court. So I think the reputational damage is huge for Kleiner Perkins. I think for women in Silicon Valley, and that's the reason why those women took out the full-page ad in the Palo Alto paper saying, thank you, Ellen, she at least brings awareness to the issue, which is the first step for Silicon Valley firms paying attention to the issue.
Yeah, and, you know, the corporate executive in me and the risk manager in me says, you know, and I muttered it when we were talking, right? They should have settled. Because what you want is, it's gray enough and it's ugly enough that you really don't want those details out in the press.
Right.
And they could have lost. And they could have had catastrophic liability and they've got bad press. And so from a risk management perspective, that is exactly why you settle. If it's anywhere close, you take the high road. Now, with that said, and I think this is where it's a win, she didn't. And while she didn't win, it did expose the murkiness of the issue. And any kind of, it's like that article, I forget which campus it was, where the Rolling Stones
University of Virginia. Yeah,
University of Virginia. That's right. So she did, which I believe was a fictitious article ultimately. There was a lot of facts in it. It was a case about the rampant abuse of sex and rapes on campus.
In fraternity.
And how these rapes were reported and not acted on, and how these frat boys were getting away with taking advantage of women and hurting them. It's a horrible, horrible article if you read it. If there's any semblance of that happening, which I unfortunately believe that there is, I can't even speak to how much it makes me uncomfortable and angry. Now, the fact is, the facts in that article weren't checked, and the article got discredited. But you know what? If a discredited article still points it out, because you and I, as parents, pulled our sons aside and had a conversation when they go to college, what kind of a man are you going to be? Are you going to step up and do the right thing if you see something really bad happening to a young lady? Are you going to be the kind that jumps in on it? You're going to be the kind that doesn't jump in on it but just walks away? Are you going to be the kind of young man that says, this is not good, I'm not going to tolerate it, this has to stop? And are you going to be a hero and stop it? And so if anything, and I suspect we might have had that dialogue anyway, but I'm not sure because you don't think about those kind of things. And so if anything, that brought light to, even if that wasn't factually correct, the reality is this bad stuff happens and the article brought light to it. And so this is kind of the same thing. Even though she didn't win, you know bad stuff happens and this brings light to it. And if anything, it puts people on alert. You better be on your P's and Q's because you could end up in court as well.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you from the symbolic. It was a larger symbolic win for the women in Silicon Valley, because Ellen Pao was courageous. She took on her employer. I agree with your sentiments exactly. She fought an issue that exists. Whether we can prove it to the letter of the law and how bad it was, she still won the case in making sure that it's a topic that's, she put a face to it, in fairness. So I personally want to thank Ellen for doing so, because I think that takes a lot of courage, and it doesn't diminish in my eyes because she didn't win the case. And I also think that the media didn't view this as being a frivolous lawsuit without merit. It was a technical loss that she suffered, and the courts do care about the technical details, but I don't think anyone truly believes in covering this case that there wasn't some tinge of bias, but in the end you still had to prove it without a reasonable doubt.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I guess you got to keep talking about this kind of stuff, right? Because there's going to be a situation where the cases get settled out of court. And so you have to be prepared to constantly shine a light on some of the inadequacies going on in the entrepreneurial space, in the corporate sector, in the Silicon Valley venture capital world. And we're not going to change cultures unless, and it's almost like those that don't like what's going on in the Middle East, and countries that hate America and hate Western civilization. And you're never going to change it unless you confront it, unless you get those that are on that side that don't feel that way to stand up. It's the same thing. I know it's kind of a hard analogy to make, but if you're in the corporate environment, if you're in startups, all of the same rules apply. If you run your own small business, all of the same rules apply. And the more that we talk about it, the more that we say it's taboo, it can't happen because that's someone's sister, that's someone's wife, then we're going to start to change the culture. But we're not going to change the culture if we sweep it under the rug.
Well, that was a heavy topic to end our episode on. And I think it's great that we're talking about Ellen Powell and what she's done. And you also, if you think about our episode today, talking about a lot of the great things that women are doing for Trailblazers as well. And our job is to cover this type of news and bring it to our listeners. So it is Passover and Easter weekend, everyone, and we here at the Power Lunch Radio want to thank you for being listeners for us, and we want to wish you and your families a happy and healthy and safe Passover or Easter weekend. Thank you for tuning in, and we can't wait till next week to bring you more women headliners in the news. Talk to you all soon. Have a great week.